You're listening to the Whole Hog Football Podcast, sponsored by Bud Anderson Home Services, bringing you the latest news, position analysis, and more. Here's your hosts, Matt Jones and Scotty Bordelon.
Arkansas is headed to the Outback Bowl. The Razorbacks will play Penn State on New Year's Day at 11 a.m. It is the first time that the Razorbacks have been in a Florida bowl game since 2006. That's when the Razorbacks lost to Wisconsin in the Capital One Bowl, which is now the Citrus Bowl. Just the eighth time that Arkansas has ever been invited to a Florida bowl game. Those bowl games, whether it be the Citrus Bowl, the Outback Bowl, the Gator Bowl, Orange Bowl, those are all very prestigious bowls. And Arkansas back in that conversation, going to play Penn State. Should be an interesting game. Today, we'll take a look at the game, the matchup. We've looked into Penn State a little bit. We'll tell you what we know about the Nittany Lions. Matt Jones with Clay Henry of Hogs Illustrated and Scotty Bordelon of Whole Hog Sports. And Scotty and I, we wrote something shortly after the announcement, kind of went into quick research on Penn State. And Scotty, this is a team that looks a lot better, I think, than their record probably indicates. They're 7-5, but their five losses have been by a combined 21 points against Ohio State, Michigan, Michigan State, Iowa, and Illinois. Illinois is the outlier there. Otherwise, those are all really solid teams they've lost to, and they've been in contention to win those games into the fourth quarter.
Yeah, man, Penn State's going to be a pretty good football team, and I think they climbed to as high as number four in the AP poll after a really hot start to the season. You know, they beat, I believe, Wisconsin on the road in week one, and I think a few weeks later they had a pretty thrilling home win over Auburn. That was one of the funner games of that weekend. They're, you know, Penn State's gonna play pretty good defense. Like, they've got some guys, you know, at all three levels who are, you know, they have the potential to give Arkansas some fits. They've got an all Big Ten first team defensive lineman who led the Big Ten in tackles for loss. And I think he was third in sacks, like 9.5, 18 tackles for loss. And, you know, they've got one guy in the secondary who's got four picks, and he's not even, they're all Big Ten first team guy. And so it's a pretty good defense. They're a little bit opportunistic. They've, you know, picked off three passes and taken them back for touchdowns this year. And in the previous five seasons, I believe they had three pick sixes total. So that's a defense that can, you know, turn turnovers into points in a hurry. You know, the back half of their schedule, though, you know, that defense slipped a little bit. I think they gave up, you know, more than 400 yards of total offense three of their last five games, and that kind of contributed to that, you know, kind of downward spiral a little bit toward the end. But really good defensive team. I mean, they gave up the fifth fewest points in the country this year, so Arkansas's offense is going to have its work cut out for it.
You could make an argument, Scotty, that this is the best defense that they've seen outside of Georgia this year.
Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, I was looking at some more of the numbers. I mean, they've held opponents to 20 points or less in 8 of 12 games. I mean, it doesn't really matter who you're playing. You're bound to have a bad day every now and then. But the 20 points is pretty solid. They've got a couple of shutout wins over Indiana and Rutgers. I mean, those aren't exactly – it would have been more impressive if Penn State had shut out Indiana last year. But still, two shutouts in a season is pretty solid. They gave up 21 touchdowns. That's the fewest among all Big Ten teams. So I think you're probably right. You know, maybe obviously outside of Georgia and Alabama, the Alabama defense that played in the SEC championship game is probably one of the best defenses, if not the best. I'd probably put them at number two that Arkansas has seen.
You know, the thing that's interesting about this, and yeah, we know the players and what they did during the season. We just don't know how they're going to be used and if all of those guys will participate in the bowl. Some of the upperclassmen, you know, are draft eligible on this defense. And the key thing is Brent Pry taking the Virginia Tech job, their defensive coordinator. Just imagine if Barry Odom had left Arkansas in the last 2 days and taken another job and was not going to be there for the bowl. James Franklin's right-hand man has been Brent Pry for 16 years, Vanderbilt and at Penn State. And their defense has been a constant. In fact, James Franklin has said this week, we're going to hire a defensive coordinator, but we're going to keep doing exactly what we've been doing. Well, that's easier said than done. You know, I think that you'll see if there are any changes, you know, fairly quickly in the bowl game. But it's, you know, that's the part about these bowl games is the transition in coaching staffs, you know, what the mindset of the players are. Do they want to play for their new defense? I mean, what you know, we've just rarely seen smooth transitions like this happen this late in the season. So, but I will tell you that they do have great linebackers, and I think that's going to be the magic of this game. Penn State forever has been known as linebacker U, and you can go back and you can find, you know, every 5 years they've got one or two that are going to end up playing in the NFL. They've got two now. Arkansas's got three. I think that's the interesting aspect of this matchup is, you know, which of these linebacker sets, you know, is the one to give, because they haven't all year. It's been tough sledding for offenses against these guys. Right, Matt?
Sure has. To me, bowl games are really hard to project because there's so much time in between the end of the regular season and the game. So, for instance, when Arkansas plays Penn State on January 1st, by that point, I think it will have been about, 5 weeks since their previous game against Missouri. You know, there's a lot of rust that you have to shake off. The bowl practices get interrupted by trips home for Christmas for some of the players. You've got finals that are in it. It's just a completely different time. And then everybody kind of reconvenes at the bowl site, and you've got the distractions of being in a big city like Tampa. You've got an 11 a.m. kickoff on New Year's Day, just a few hours after the biggest party of the year for a lot of people. And so it's so hard to project these games, Clay, because I think a lot of times it just kind of comes down to self-discipline. And we haven't even mentioned that, you know, you've got a lot of players on both rosters this year who they've also got their NFL draft that they're thinking about. Now, whether or not any of them opt out, I don't know if they will, but it's just so hard to kind of project what you're going to get in these bowl situations.
Yeah. Listening to James Franklin, he said, I'm letting the players make their announcements. Well, if he's expecting players to make announcements, that means somebody's not going to play. He didn't say, I hope they all play. He just said, some of them are going to make their announcements and I'll let them do it. So I think he's already aware of what's going to happen with his team. Now, whether, you know, Treylon Burks is part of Arkansas's, offense in the bowl game, we don't know that. He has, you know, he, for all that we know, he's going to be full in. But, yeah, you're right. Things can change in 3 weeks, 3.5 weeks, actually, for a January 1st bowl from now till then. There's plenty of chances and practices if they want to change their defensive keys, the way they recognize and flow to the ball. You know, that's always the danger, and I've heard coaches talk about that. It says, we've scouted them. We know what their keys are defensively. You do this, they do that. And all at once you do this and, you know, a different guy slides into the middle and you didn't, and all at once it's an interception. Doesn't take many of those little twerks, little changes to really ruin an offensive game plan.
Scotty, we wrote Sunday about some of the players to watch for Penn State. One that jumps off the page for me is Jahan Dotson, their wide receiver. Treylon Burks didn't make the Biletnikoff semifinalist list. We talked about that quite a bit this year. Dotson, he did. A really good receiver for Penn State. I think he's top 15 nationally in yards, touchdowns, receptions. He's kind of the total package, almost 1,200 yards, 12 touchdowns this year.
Yeah, he's a really talented guy. He had a 242-yard receiving game against Maryland. You know, you say what you want to about Maryland, it doesn't matter who you get 242 receiving yards against. That's an incredible day. Had 3 touchdowns, 11 catches in that game. He's been over 100 yards in 5 games and went over 200 yards once. And, I mean, he's almost at 100 catches. Like, he I would imagine, is the Treylon Burks of Penn State's offense. You know, that kind of leads into one of possibly the more interesting, you know, one-on-one matchups. If Arkansas decides to, you know, go a lot of man coverage against Penn State, you know, Monteric Brown, I feel like, is a guy who's had an all SEC caliber type of season. I think he's tied for the league lead with 5 picks, and he's just been a real playmaker. I mean, outside of the interceptions, you know, he had the, like Clay mentioned on the last podcast, had a pretty timely forced fumble, recovered a fumble. It seems like he's made some big plays and some really big games. I know Arkansas lost to Auburn, but he had a pick against Bo Nix that kind of, you know, allowed Arkansas a chance to get back into that game. And I remember the pick against Texas A&M, obviously. He had a really, really good game at LSU, had the game-sealing pick. And LSU didn't beat him with the pass. And so that's potentially one of the bigger, more interesting matchups to me. I think if Busta ends up getting the assignment with Dotson, that would be a fun one to watch, no doubt.
Yeah, the other matchup is is Arkansas's defensive front against a pass protection unit that's given up a bunch of sacks. And Arkansas hadn't gotten a lot of sacks, but this is an opportunity to really the protection for Penn State has been one of their bugaboos. And if you look at their rushing yardage, it's not impressive, but it's because there's been a bunch of sacks subtracted to their rushing yardage. You know, they average 80 yards a game, but you know, it's a ton of sack yardage that they've come off, and do not have a scrambling quarterback. He's not proven to be mobile. And I think that's a plus for Arkansas. I know Barry Odom, if he sees a one-dimensional team, then he gets fired up. And that's what I see with this Penn State offense. And they don't make a lot of mistakes. They don't throw interceptions. They're plus in the turnover ratio. And so that's a big factor in this game. Neither quarterback throws it into coverage. The difference in the two teams is KJ Jefferson will make plays with his feet, and Clifford, the Penn State quarterback, has not shown the ability this year, maybe a little more last year, and maybe some injuries have bothered him this year, but he has not been someone that wants to run down the field out of the pocket.
Wrote this on Sunday in that What to Know About Penn State with Matt. In the first six games of the season, Penn State had 8 rushing touchdowns, rushed for an average of better than 129 yards per game. And in the back half of the schedule, 3 rushing touchdowns, 83.8 yards per game. So that rushing game, and Clay made a good point too, that the pass protection is obviously contributing to that dip in rushing yardage. But, you know, if Arkansas can turn Penn State one-dimensional, I think Barry Odom is going to jump at that. And Arkansas has had a lot of success, obviously, this year with teams that are, you know, like Missouri, that are really run oriented and struggle to throw the ball. I think Arkansas could have some success with that.
Sean Clifford, their quarterback, he's had a lot of success there. They weren't real good last year in 2020, but, you know, I think that was kind of an aberration for a lot of teams because there were a lot of things going on last season. People forget that he took them undefeated into November in 2019, and they were just a few plays away from potentially beating Minnesota and Ohio State and being in the college football playoff. They still got into the Cotton Bowl 2 years ago. This has been a really solid program under James Franklin.
You got to remember, too, like the back half of Penn State's schedule. I mean, they've got Ohio State, Michigan State, all of those teams right now are well within the AP top 15. So their schedule's been kind of backloaded. So that contributes to some of those numbers dipping a little bit as opposed to the beginning of the year, for sure.
There is a good debate to be had about whether or not the SEC West or the Big Ten East, where Penn State plays, is the best division in football, Clay.
Yeah, and which one has the most speed? I think that's the question that we'll be asking. Raymond James Field, you know, it's an NFL surface. The Tampa Bay Bucks play there. It's a great, fast surface. And I think that the old stereotype is SEC has the speed, Penn State has the size and the strength. I'm not sure that's correct. I think we've seen in some of these Big Ten Arkansas matchups that the Arkansas speed didn't shine through. Will it in this game? I think that's what you know, that you hope for if you're an Arkansas coach, that you have a little more speed. That this is a Penn State team that will slug it out and is not afraid to punt. You know, they don't, you know, they'll turn it over to their defense, and you just look at those scores against the teams that you just rattled off, those, you know, strong Big Ten teams that all were in at least consideration by the playoff committee. Arkansas wasn't. Penn State, until, you know, the first month of the season, you'd have to say they were probably on the radar of the playoff committee. They weren't doing rankings, but they sure were watching their games because of who they were playing.
As is often the case in bowl games, this is going to be the first time that Arkansas and Penn State have ever met. Something fun I started tracking several years ago was just basically the Power Five teams that Arkansas hasn't played. And it's a pretty large list of teams still. It's kind of surprising that there have been so many teams the Razorbacks haven't played. This is going to change in the next few years when the Big 12 expands and OU and Texas come to the SEC. There's going to be more than this number. But right now there's 65 Power 5 teams, 64 other Power 5 teams if you take Arkansas out of the equation. There are still 22 teams if you take Penn State off the list, Clay, that they haven't played. It's just amazing to think how many matchups are still out there that, you know, could potentially be played for the first time in a bowl game or otherwise. It's a pretty fascinating thing to watch.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to some games next year that, you know, and BYU, you know, they're technically not a Power Five team, although the SEC for scheduling purpose considers BYU to be a Power Five team, and they will be a Power Five team, you know, at some point in the future. I think that's going to be a great trip for the Razorbacks, and Brigham Young played really well. They may not have, you know, just a ton of victories this year, but they played really well this year. And I think that's a strong team. I think that there's a lot of out West matchups that are yet to be seen with Arkansas. But I would advise Hunter Yurecek not to be scheduling Southern Cal right now. I remember when Arkansas scheduled Southern Cal when they were down, and all at once you play them and Pete Carroll's got them rolling. I wouldn't play Southern Cal right now. Leave that one alone.
Yeah, I think USC was like 5-7 in Carroll's first season. They scheduled them and they had no clue what they were going to have. It's not just West Coast teams. It's East Coast teams. I've actually got the list here. There are seven Pac-12 teams that Arkansas haven't played. Arizona, Colorado, Oregon, Oregon State, Utah, Washington, and Washington State. They'll start a series with Utah in 2026. They'll go to Salt Lake City. Utah will come back to Fayetteville in 2029. In the Big 12 right now, as the Big 12 is, West Virginia is the only team they haven't played. Cincinnati and BYU, they've never played either of them. They're going to the Big 12, but they're going to play both of those teams next year. In the Big 10, with Penn State off the list, Illinois, Indiana, Maryland, Michigan State, Purdue. But the most teams from one conference that Arkansas hasn't played is the ACC. Nine teams from the ACC: Boston College, Clemson, Florida State, Louisville, North Carolina State, Pittsburgh, Syracuse, Virginia, and Wake Forest. That doesn't count Notre Dame, who competes in the ACC in basically every sport but football. They were in the ACC last year. Notre Dame, another one of those teams that counts toward the Power Five requirement. They'll play them in 2025 for the first time in Fayetteville. They'll go to South Bend in 2028 for that game that was canceled last year.
I love some of those matchups, and I think the SEC, ACC, they ought to get a football deal set up where there's cross games. I think there was some talk about that, but we're probably looking at when Oklahoma and Texas come into the league, maybe you'll have a 9-game SEC schedule. So some of that, some of the playing those heavyweights in other Power Five, it might be tougher to do at that point. That's one of the major questions that still remains to be answered. And what will you do when there's, you know, a 12-team playoff instead of a 4-team playoff? And is strength of schedule a major component for, you know, being one of those non-champions from, you know, the major conferences? You'll want to have, two Power Five non-conference games to load up your strength of schedule, or maybe you don't.
It'll be interesting to see how some of these teams handle their future schedule, Scotty, because like Georgia, you know, they play Georgia Tech every year. And in addition to that, they've got some years coming up where I think they've scheduled two other Power Five teams in addition to Georgia Tech, potentially playing a 9-game SEC schedule on that. That just doesn't sound like that's very good for anybody's job security.
No, I think you're absolutely right. I was looking at the story that you wrote about teams Arkansas hadn't played in a Power Five, and just looking at some of these teams that might be, you know, might make for an interesting game is like a Washington. And maybe I'm just a little bit off base and maybe too young, but I just feel like Arkansas and Washington are comparable in terms of like where they stand in their own leagues. So that could be maybe an interesting game. I'm kind of surprised that Arkansas hasn't played like a Florida State, like just by chance, like in a bowl game or something. I think NC State might be an interesting game. I don't know, a Michigan State too. Like that would be kind of a, just the way that Arkansas is trending right now and the way Mel Tucker has Michigan State playing, like that would be a pretty fun smash mouth game. You're right. Just if you go to a 9-game SEC schedule, throwing in another team like that, man, that's just the toll that it's going to take on some of those guys' bodies. Might be best to schedule maybe another in-state school instead.
Yeah, I throw out an interesting non-conference game next year, SEC versus Big 12. Alabama, September 10th, goes to Darrell K. Royal Stadium to play the Texas Longhorns. I don't know that, that Texas is really going to want to be in the SEC after that game.
Who knows? That might be an SEC championship game at some point in the future. Alabama and Texas obviously going to be SEC opponents. I'd like to see Arkansas play Colorado at Folsom Field. There's kind of a dream scenario. That's a really neat setting there in Boulder. The Whole Hog Football Podcast is brought to you by Bud Anderson Home Services. Visit them online at gocallbud.com.
Bud Anderson is proud to be the official heating and cooling provider for the Arkansas Razorbacks. This partnership will support all Razorback athletics for over 400 student athletes across 19 sports. Woo-pee!
WholeHogSports.com has the largest, most experienced staff of reporters covering sports in Arkansas. Football, basketball, baseball, recruiting, and more. You'll find it at WholeHogSports.com. The website includes up-to-minute news, daily commentaries, and award-winning photography from the staffs of Hogs Illustrated and the Democrat Gazette. For subscriptions, call 1-800-757-6277. That's 1-800-757-6277. Or visit us online today. WholeHogSports.com.
Want more coverage of your home team? Download the Whole Hog Sports Video On Demand app. Check out the Fan Zone and get up-to-the-minute videos, podcasts, and features on football, basketball, baseball, recruiting, and more. Search for Whole Hog Sports on Apple TV, Roku, and Amazon Fire at home. And take it with you on the go by downloading it for your mobile device in your app store. The Whole Hog Sports Video On Demand app. Get it today.
Welcome back to the Whole Hog Football Podcast.
The winner of the 2021 Earl's Work Trophy from the University of Arkansas, Grant Morgan.
That was how it sounded Monday night inside Crystal Bridges in Bentonville when Grant Morgan was presented the Earl's Work Trophy. The audio that you just heard probably isn't real indicative of what it was actually like in the room. When Marty Burlsworth opened the envelope and said University of Arkansas, if you were in the room, you couldn't hear him say Grant Morgan's name. It was a loud ovation, really excited group of people there at Crystal Bridges to see Grant Morgan win that award, not only because it is an award that's named for Brandon Burlsworth, obviously a great Razorback, one of two Razorbacks with his number retired, but the fact that Morgan didn't win it last year, and there were a lot of people who thought he was deserving of winning it last year. I mean, if you look, Clay, at Grant Morgan statistically, 2021 hasn't been as good as 2020. In 2020, he had 111 tackles in 9 games. This year, he has 96 tackles in 12 games. Now, I know part of that has to do with they've gotten better play this year from Bumper Pool. They've gotten better play from Hayden Henry. But it was a really neat deal to see him win it. And I think the Burlsworth Trophy, it gets overshadowed by some of these other trophies that go out this week. The Heisman, obviously, you know, the Bednarik Award, the Outland Trophy, you go on down the list. But I think to the walk-ons, this award has actually started to really mean something to them, and you can really tell it when they win it. This is a deal that, you know, they really feel validated their path through college football to get to this point.
Yeah, it was really cool. And Matt, I know you were there. I watched it online, and you know, the online room that for it, YouTube was massive. So I know a lot of people were, you know, in there in spirit, and there probably were some shouts in Razorback homes, you know, around the state, because this is a quote, our award. This is this is our guy, Brandon. I mean, he's larger than life to us. And, you know, if you go to, you know, Southern Cal or Penn State or Alabama or any of those other places, they've got to explain who Brandon Burlesworth is. We know, we lived it. We, you know, we mourned his loss. We grieved and celebrated that there's an Arkansas player that should win. And it was devastating to a lot of people last year when he didn't win, especially when you say, here's a center that has no stats. You know, measure an offensive line versus a linebacker. Well, it's almost impossible to do, but they're both, you know, a valuable player. You know, I would have told you start of the year to lose Ricky Stromberg would be almost as devastating as to lose a Grant Morgan, probably more so, because, you know, you had two other linebackers. You didn't have another center. So just think about what, you know, this Pitt center is, you know, multiple year all, you know, ACC performer. You know, he was drafted, and we didn't understand it though. And I will say that they got it right this year though. And I think probably the fact that he finished second last year is a big part of him winning this year. It's not a career award, you know, it's not class warfare, but in many respects, you have to consider what Grant's career was and what he meant to this team and what he's done. I mean, heart and soul is the right description for Grant Morgan when you talk about the Arkansas Razorbacks and what they've been through the last 4 or 5 years and the rebirth of the program. So it was exciting. And I can understand, Matt, you said it was probably the rowdiest group ever at Crystal Bridges. I know there's been some corporate events that maybe the alcohol has flowed before, but you're probably right, rowdiest ever.
It's definitely the loudest I've ever heard an art museum. I think in some respects it is a career award. I think about when Baker Mayfield won the Heisman Trophy in 2017, he had won the Burlesworth Trophy the previous two seasons in 15 and 16, and Luke Falk, who was the same age as Baker, the Washington State quarterback, he had finished runner-up in 15 and 16. He got the Burlesworth Trophy in 17, the same year that Mayfield got the Heisman Trophy. There's no doubt that Mayfield was the best player who had been a walk-on in college football in 2017. I think that goes to show you that there probably is some career element to this award. Now that Morgan has won it, there have been three multi-time finalists for the Burlesworth Trophy, and all three of those, Mayfield, Falk, and Grant Morgan, have won the award at least once.
What's really interesting is I'll bet you that these other players didn't make any decision about this is what I'm playing for. Grant Morgan told us last night he was playing for this award. It's in his mind. I mean, he told me last, I guess it was May, that he was upset that he didn't win. It was like, I lost a game. I felt the same way. And he says, I don't really think about my All-America award or, you know, any of the other awards that he's gotten during his time at Arkansas. He said they were in the corner. His wife wanted to put him on the wall, and he said, just put him in the corner. I have a feeling that the Burlesworth Award is going up on the wall in Grant Morgan's home pretty quick. I think he coveted this award. He trained in the off season with it in mind that he had lost something. I doubt there's any other player in the country that probably would tell you the same thing. They're probably glad to be considered, but in some respects, probably surprised that they were nominated for it, that they didn't know it existed. So I think that in our state, it is something that everybody understands. And certainly Arkansas players, when they walk up and down the halls in the locker room, in the training facility, that they see Brandon Burlesworth, and they know about his locker and his retired number. So that's an interesting aspect of this whole event.
I think people are going to remember Grant Morgan, maybe not in the exact same way that they do Brandon Burlesworth, but I mean, Grant's just, I mean, think about where he came from. I mean, got here in 2016, like that feels like in Arkansas football years, that feels like a decade ago, you know, just in terms of where the program was and where it is now. And he's been there the whole time. And, you know, his final year, you know, he wins this award. He's got Arkansas back to, he helped Arkansas get to 8 regular season wins for the first time in an actual decade. And I think it kind of dawned on me last year that Grant was, you know, a real player that I feel like we're going to remember for a long time. You know, he had a big game. I think it was against Ole Miss. He's out there playing with one arm and ran a pick back. And Sam Pittman after the game said that he is Arkansas. And just, I don't know that there's a guy that is on Arkansas's roster and has been on Arkansas's roster in quite some time that kind of embodies what the state is. Like, he's blue collar, good old boy from Sebastian County. And I think everybody just kind of connects with him, and he is pretty outspoken. I mean, he's not afraid to tell you exactly what's on his mind. And he's been a real spokesman for this team, especially for the defensive side of the ball. Been a captain, a guy that you can really depend on, and you know that, you know, he's going to give you everything he's got. He wanted to play on a bad knee last year, and he played with one good arm last year. And I just think the legacy that Grant is leaving is pretty special.
He told me after he won it last night, he said, "This feels like winning the national championship. This feels like winning the Heisman Trophy." He said that's how important winning the Burlesworth Trophy was to him. I feel like Grant Morgan was the perfect player at that point in his career to be on Arkansas's team when Sam Pittman and Barry Odom came in, because it seemed like he just personified, Clay, everything that they were trying to instill in the team: toughness, physicality. Those were the traits that, you know, we've seen from him throughout his career. And I don't know that they could have asked for any better player to be on the team to help transition from those previous coaching staffs to what they were trying to teach this team to become than they got in Grant Morgan.
Well, they always say that, you know, the leadership of your team is the most important aspect, and he's a great leader. And I, you know, going back to the Ole Miss game last year, and you have to remember that was COVID. There's 16,000 people in the stadium, but when he intercepted that pass, and we're in an open air press box, that stadium erupted. It was, to me, as loud as I've ever heard a crowd in that stadium. And maybe it's because of the, you know, the stark contrast of it, you know, having empty areas of the stadium where they're spread out. But people were on their feet. They were jumping up and down on those aluminum, you know, benches, screaming. And to me, it was as loud as it was for the Texas game this year. And I think part of it was, you know, the sheer joy for him, and also, you know, for fans, you know, like all the abuse that we've taken. And this is a victory over a hated team by one of our guys.
I agree with you 100%. I was there, and I think I wrote that after the game. I think it was as easily as, you know, loud as you'll hear a stadium, at least with, you know, that number of people in it. The other thing that was so big about that interception and that game is that interception, it clinched the victory for him, and that was the game that gave them their first SEC win in Fayetteville in 4 years. And that was a really big deal for him. Just a great deal for Grant Morgan to win the Burlesworth Trophy. You know, they've got a Burlesworth Trophy in the north end zone of Razorback Stadium there in the UA Hall of Honor area in the new Broyles Center. That's in an area where there's a lot of memorabilia about Brandon Burlesworth. Now they'll get to move one down to the Smith Center, and they'll put it alongside all the other national awards that Arkansas has had you know, the Doak Walker Award, the tight end award. I'm forgetting what that's called. The Mackey Award, the Remington Trophy. This is going to go right there with that.
One interesting note, I shared a text last night, actually a whole screen set shot, different text with Matt Morgan, who's Grant's dad, Drew's dad. You just think about the ride that he's been on over the last decade, and, you know, that, you know, seen his son really, you know, do some great things. But both of them, you know, reflect the kind of dad that he is. You know, I mean, they're just, you know, I've covered a lot of Razorbacks, and those two have to be the most engaging, entertaining interviews that you can ever imagine. I'm not saying they're my favorite players. They're among them, but they have to rate as my favorite interviews. And you're going to get good copy, right? And just like Scotty said, when you ask either one of those guys a question, you better have your tape recorder, because you won't be able to keep up. They're chatterboxes, and I don't mean that in a bad way. It's that they have a way of expressing themselves that is different than most college athletes.
Those boys are always thorough when they give you answers. They're not gonna short you, man. They're gonna be really, really thorough.
Drew was up on stage after Grant won the award on Monday night, and that was a proud big brother moment. I can tell you that, watching the two of them together. Really neat deal for Grant Morgan winning the Burlsworth Trophy. Now Arkansas just needs to get an assistant coach that wins the Broyles Award, and that would be, I think, as big of a deal as having a player win the Burlsworth Trophy was last night. We'll be back with another Whole Hog Football podcast next week. Before then, make sure to join us for the basketball podcast of Mid-America. Arkansas plays a basketball game against Charlotte on Tuesday night at Bud Walton Arena, and we'll have a basketball podcast later this week recapping that game. Looking forward to this weekend's game against Oklahoma at the BOK Center in Tulsa. For Clay Henry and Scotty Bordelon, I'm Matt Jones. Hope you'll join us at WholeHogSports.com for our latest Razorback football coverage, and we'll see you again next week.
The proceeding has been a production of WholeHogSports.com. Look for our latest podcast on iTunes, Spotify, or your favorite podcast store. And visit us anytime at WholeHogSports.com for the latest news and commentary.